You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Richie. Maybe on Walker. Pugh.
That'll do it! That will do it! Pugh for Bournemouth! The roof of the Gold Sands is raised! Everyone here knows what that could mean to this football club.
Hello, Cherries fans. Strap yourselves in. Welcome to Back of the Net. My name's Sam Davis. With me, we've got the main man.
Tom Jordan.
And also a special guest this week. By the way, of introduce yourself, sir.
I'm Keefy T. I'm the sexiest man in Milford.
You are the sexiest man in Milford. You're sexy. It's not so sexy on the pitch. What a beautiful segue. Look, on this show, a lot of Brighton chat, Gary O'Neill debate, and much more besides. We're recording this at the Basement Studio. It's located in the centre of Bournemouth. And they cater to musicians, producers, voice actors, and podcasters who are looking for a professional environment to record, mix, and master their studio. It offers a spacious live room with a separate vocal booth and a comfortable mixing room as well. And they provide a range of services and packages to aid in your creative endeavour. Plus, it plays host to the Wanna Be A Star party experience, which is perfect for kids' birthdays, adult birthdays and hen do's. It's a new home for Back of the Net. Check them out at wannabeastar.co.uk. Now, Tom, there's been plenty of people online on Twitter who are wondering who has won the Tube Map AFC Bournemouth history print.
How's that going? Did I win?
Shall we do it now or should we tease them? We're going to tease it.
We'll tease it.
We'll do it later on in the show. So, on Saturday, a late header from Mitoma. It saw Brighton take all 3 points at the Amex. Gary O'Neill, he named a number of debutants in the lineup. We had the return of some players as well, including Chris Meppham and Marcus Senesi as well. And Bournemouth, we put in a better performance. But once again, we were punished, not for the first time, because of our own tactical wrongdoings. Tom, it's becoming a bit of a habit, this, isn't it?
Just a little bit, mate. It was same sort of stuff I felt to the Forest game in terms of everyone saying, yeah, a lot of improvements, a little bit more of a counter-attacking threat, I guess. We did offer that. But again, moments, whether it's, a bit of tactical naivety, decision-making in both boxes has cost us. And I think I said it in the fan cams after, we're saying it's improvements, but again, goalkeepers don't have to do anything. The goalkeepers never have to do anything against us. I think I said beforehand, didn't I, that since the break, since Gaz got the job, I can remember David De Gea tipping an Antony shot over the bar. Apart from that, I don't think any team needed a goalkeeper against us. And we're coming off at half-time going, that wasn't a bad first half. And then you look at it and go, so what's happened in that first half? Well, we've had to make goal line clearances and the woodwork. And their goalie hadn't had to make a save. And that but we're happy because that's how bad it's been. But again, mate, didn't look like scoring. Conceded a, they won the set piece, but a cross and a header. And results didn't go away either, so another bad one.
The league table leaves Bournemouth 19th, only a point off Leeds, albeit they do have two games in hand.
Who's bottom?
Saints.
Mind the gap. We've always got that.
We've always got that. That's the only thing we've got at the moment. And yeah. Also, we're 2 points off everyone else. So, doesn't feel like a good time to be a Bournemouth fan, Keithy. But it's not just the Brighton game, is it? There's wider discussions to be had on this podcast, I'm assuming.
I'm assuming that we're going to be talking about Gary O'Neill. There's a lot of questions why he's still there, what's going to be happening in the future. Obviously, we've just had a good transfer window, but is that going to be showing promise going forward with the coach we've got at the moment? So those are the sort of debates that we're having, certainly online and within the fan base. And it's all rather unsettling because this season's proven to be quite a monumental season for change. New owner. We thought we were going to have one manager and he went, and now we've got Gary, and it all feels very, very unsettling.
It does feel unsettling, and it seems to be that the tide's turning a little bit, not within the fan base. I think that happened a number of weeks ago, but even the local media now, Keith, are starting to tweet and write articles which question Gary O'Neill's appointment, why he's still manager, how he was appointed, what got them to that point as well. So when that happens, you sort of sense the writing's on the wall. I just wonder whether Neil Blake and Foley and stuff, they're shaking their graffiti can ready to do that writing.
It's a difficult time to read what's going on in the club, and I think you always got to bear in mind there's a context behind this. Obviously, we had Project Parker at the beginning, and that went horrifically awry. So Gary has stepped in, and I get the impression that he's trying to manage a process where there's potentially huge upheaval coming down the pike. So, you know, he's already had to say to a number of players who are now on loan, you're no longer part of our plans. Now, as a human being, that's really hard. So he's got to do that. He's got to also bear in mind there's staff that are, you know, reliant on their jobs, and are they going to be keeping their jobs going forward and all this sort of thing. So there's not of upheaval, I'm speculating, that's going on. But nonetheless, what he's doing on the pitch is showing rather similar to Scott Parker, ironically. So he, even with the new signings, you still get those same patterns of play, and also his substitutions are either late or they look, why are you doing that? When I certainly think in during the game, taking Traore, although he was tiring, for Christie, sort of like with allowing them even more pressure on, and their Brighton's game is all about pressure, sitting, camping in our half, waiting for that one chance, and on another date they could have got 3-4.
I think we'll go through the team lineups. It was Neto, Adam Smith, Mepham, Senesi, Zamora, Ouattara, Lerma, Billing, Anthony, Traore, Semenyo. And whilst we're doing the show, we're also going to place a few tweets on screen. So if you're watching on YouTube, you know what we're talking about. And we'll reference the names as well. And Aging Cherry was the first one to say, oh, Neto's got the armband. What's that all about?
Yeah, interesting one. I don't really know what that says. I've seen that since he's just said he's a good leader, and that's, but it's more the fact that you're taking it off someone, because we all know Smith's captain if Kelly's not playing. Only thing I can think of is maybe the language barrier with certain new signings, and maybe you can translate things better.
So why did Gary O'Neill say that? This is what Gary O'Neill told the Echo. Yeah, I think Neto is a leader. He's fantastic with all the players. He's a good guy. I like what he brings. It was just Neto that could lead the boys on Saturday. That's so vague.
I would have quite liked the response to that answer to be, so does that mean Smith doesn't then? Because that's basically what you're saying, but he wouldn't have said, oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it would have been interesting to go, oh, so Smith doesn't do that then? I don't really understand. So yeah, who knows? I mean, I don't think that was the indicator of the performance or result, but yeah, weird one. I guess maybe with his experience in general and the sort of clubs he's been at, and maybe you want to take a bit of that pressure off Smith, who knows. But yeah, it was a notable thing that we saw in the lineups that I didn't expect.
In terms of the game itself, we're not going to go over the chronological timeline much, but you can, if you watch on YouTube, see it on screen now in terms of what happened when. But Tom, we're seeing a story time and time again. It's rinse and repeat. It's basically the Forest game, but without the opposition gifting us an equaliser. Sorry, an opening goal.
Yeah.
It's insanity what we're seeing. You've said this before. Mm. The same thing week in, week out. We expect different results. We get the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. It was from minute one, I thought, yeah, we've probably got a bit more pace than we used to on the break because we haven't got kind of your Christy Kiefer Moores up there. We've got players that are a bit more, yeah, a bit more able to counter-attack appropriately. But game plan was the same, really. Soak it all up. They're going to have all the ball. I've always seen, you know, just a broader point, obviously, Sean Dyche come in and got the win, obviously the first Everton game. And people are saying, you know, it's the style of football that you wouldn't want Dyche. Well, even against Arsenal, top of the league, that they won 1-0, they had more possession than we did in a defeat to Brighton with 29% possession. So we're not trying to do anything with the ball. We're trying to counter-attack, which makes a bit more sense now with the pace we've got. I thought some of the new lads done all right. But yeah, it was the same patterns as you say, mate. Lerma was definitely sat deeper and then, you know, Billin and Traore trying to get a little bit closer to Semenyo. But yeah, within 5 minutes, it was kind of same stuff, as you say, mate. And unfortunately for us, I think Brighton, no disrespect to Forest because they earned the point against us, but Brighton are a better team. Mm. So, you know, it was only really going to go one way unless we're going to decide to actually test a goalkeeper. Mm. I think I said on the fan cams that we're always going to concede, in my opinion. We're always going to concede. So we've got to get two goals to win a football match. Mm. We're never getting two goals.
No.
We're never getting two. Our last two goals are 2 months apart. We're not getting two in one game at the way it's going. So I don't see how there's any... We all know that. So how are we trying to win a football match? We're not trying to win a football match. We're trying to get a point. Mm. We saw that with the change later on in the game. We would have been absolutely delighted with a 0-0 draw. And speaking to Brighton fans, arguably one of their worst performances of the season. And they had nearly 80% possession and won the game with a clean sheet. Mm. So, yes, not great, mate.
I'm getting tired and weary of talking about this stuff, but you sort of realise how low our bar is now and our tolerance level is because we're sort of looking at that performance and we're picking out things. Oh, well, we are better. Mm. We are better. I mean, I think the debutant Traore did really well. Mm. Ouattara threatened at times. Yeah. I think overall we look more balanced and we are creating more, but it's because we were creating so little previously that we're all happier. But really, we're still, you know, leagues below like everyone else that's doing so well.
Yeah, that's the reality of where we are at the moment. When I look at the team, it's a hodgepodge of different ideas. Mm. We've got Kiefer Moore. Now he's a big, strong target man, but we have players that go to the byline. We are inconsistent with our pressing. We seem to still have this habit of trying to knock it around at the back with no purpose. There's now dynamism and directness, and I think that's something that we'd be maybe building on going forward. We'll wait and see, but it is a mixture of all bits and pieces from the Eddie era, the Parker era, and now this new era. And how you gel that together is a big old ask. Mm. And even the most experienced managers, and you have a look at Everton, they're a hodgepodge team. And that's, you know, even to organise basically is quite hard. And then we've got this language barrier on top of that. I mean, I don't know any elite club that has usually you have a manager or people in the club that speak different languages. We've now obviously brought in Baldry into the club because he speaks French,
and that's only because Sarriki Dembélé left.
Yeah, because he was the one that could speak French.
So, and the only other person I think in the club that speaks foreign languages is Richard Hughes. Mm. Well, he isn't going to be on the touchline at the moment.
Yeah.
So it's a hodgepodge of all different ideas that's accumulated over really about 3 or 4 seasons now. And so you're not seeing a definite pattern and play. Are we a possession? Are we pressing and high intensity? I don't know. And that probably adds to all even more frustration for the players and for the fans.
There is a bit of a disconnect between the managerial era, isn't there, Tom? We were just sat in the pub earlier working out the different signings that Scott Parker signed to take us into the Premier League. What was our conclusion?
We've got two at the club, Ryan Christie and Kiefer Moore. So I think we've got, I can't even remember all of them, but you know.
Ned.
You, Laird, Woodman, Cantwell. Leif Davis, Cantwell, Nyland, Nyland, Lowe, Marcondes, Hill, Dembele, Nat Phillips. Yeah, there's loads of them. But Christian Moore, the only two at the club, but they're not players that you'd expect to start anyway. Mm. So, yeah, great. That again, just screams of there's no plan. There's no plan at all. That was just to try and hopefully help us get over the line in January and chuck loads of money and wages at people like Nat Phillips and Todd Cantwell for very short-termism. No plan at all. The only plan that we thought was there was that Parker was going to be the figurehead and we were going to move like that. And then obviously he lost his job. So, yeah. And then again, we've come and there's no experience, as Keith was alluding to, there's no experience anywhere. In the dugout, as you know, I feel for people like Coops and Tommy who are doing a really good job, and then they've just been bumped up ahead of schedule. They're there with we brought in Jenkins, didn't we, from Liverpool's Colliver Academy.
Well, not enough learning time for everyone.
There's no one there with any experience. Gary's got no one to turn to. There's no one there with any sort of experience whatsoever. Forget the players on the pitch that probably have a little bit of it. To be fair, we've got obviously we just said about Neto, but yeah, there's no real guidance. There's no real direction, and then you're seeing all that and obviously giving the job to a guy that's never been a manager, but then in January you chuck loads of money like we're a big club and that we're desperate to stay in the league. Well, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean loads of people have used loads of different analogies. I think I went for buying a Ferrari for someone without a driving license. Doesn't really make any sort of sense. We used to be a club that would get young hungry players that we had a top head coach in Eddie Howe that he would develop. And now we're deciding to get players that are already apparently ready-made for loads of money and give them to someone that can't really develop and has got no experience in development. So,
and it's not a slight on Gary O'Neill, is it?
Just shouldn't be in the job. Yeah. I mean, I've just literally seen, just briefly spoke about Everton, and Duncan Ferguson had a spell with Everton as interim manager, didn't he? And done really well. I think he was unbeaten. But they obviously didn't give him the job because they're not stupid. He went back to his coaching role and now he's just taking his first managerial job. Bottom of League One.
Yeah.
We've given Gary O'Neill a Premier League job with nearly £100 million in January. It's bonkers, absolutely bonkers. I don't really understand it. But yeah, remains to be seen. It'll be interesting now from week to week, just what sound bites we hear and what stuff's coming out, because it just none of it aligns. The January window and then what we're doing off the pitch, just none of it aligns. None of it makes any real sense. But from a fan's point of view, I'm just forget all that. I'm just want to go to football to kind of like what I'm seeing. I am at it is so boring.
And all these conversations completely override the minutiae within the game against Brighton that we can talk about. I mean, I noticed from the fan cams, you said it yourself, no one talked about the penalty claim. No one talked about VAR when chatting to Tiggs after the game, because yes, they are significant when you look at it, but really we're sort of clutching at straws. And there is a bigger picture here. And one of the key points within this bigger picture is the tactical changes that O'Neill makes in games. And one of the things he did was went from a flat back four to three at the back that was basically five at the back. And on my vlog, I can see them in a flat back five at times. And they're just inviting pressure on. Yeah. So when Brighton scored, it wasn't exactly a surprise, was it?
No. Yeah, I mean, Brighton are going to play a suffocating game anyway. That's what controlled possession-based football looks like, and they are a masterclass at it, which is a long way off the rhetoric that we were getting last season when we were just knocking around at the back. They make penetrating runs, they're always testing third-man runs and all that sort of thing, so eventually their patience will be rewarded. But when you're inviting them on and not putting any pressure on the ball and just trying to play that low block, that's meat and drink to a team like that. And so we were, as I say, I thought we were fortunate first half. The Neto, I don't know if he panicked or what have you, but to criminally give the ball away. And fortunately, the lad's only just come in, so he was a bit ring rusty. But had that been Welbeck, that'd be in the back of the goal. If it'd been Lallana, it'd be a bit in the back, or anyone else. That's in, and then the collapse would invariably come. So, no, it's panic. It's panic. It's again, and it's sort of a rinse and repeat. Also of last season, it's trying to avoid losing a game, rather than going out and trying to win a game. Mm. And when you're like that, the mentality, the mindset, at least to me, says, well, we've already been beaten before we've even got on the pitch. We're setting up like scared rabbits. And and again, that you know, Gary's a symptom of all this. This is something that's been coming for an awful long time. Unfortunately, it's when you're in the Premier League. Don't forget, we couldn't even beat Peterborough last season, or Hull, or teams in the Championship we struggled against. You're in the Premier League now. You're with the big boys, and they will punish you. And now we're being punished for, I think, as I say, lack of strategy, lack of thinking, lack of planning at the top level, in the triad of the three people that need to be running it, the head coach, we have a CEO, who's effectively a director of football, and also the technical director. So are they aligned? These are the questions that are now coming to the fore.
Yeah, we're gonna chat about the hierarchy at AFC Bournemouth, I'm absolutely certain, on this pod. And one of the things that I also want to talk about is O'Neill's views after the games, when he talks to AFCB TV or the local press. And I quote, "It was a good performance. We should have had a penalty, but I don't want to mention it too much. I've complained a lot about us not being awarded stuff. What the boys showed today against the Brighton side flying high in the league is we gave them a really tough game. They had the ball for large spells, but on the chances, I thought we gave them a really good run." I mean, he says Brighton are flying. Yes, they are. But in that individual match, they were poor. And it when he said that, it reminded me of this episode of Alan Partridge where Alan was saying to his Ukrainian wife, Sonia, that prisons are horrible. And then she says to him, "You're telling me that prisons are cushy." And he says, "Well, yeah, I was making a point about something else, though." Yeah. And that's what it strikes of. Like, Brighton, yeah, are flying. But in that match, and their fans will admit, they weren't that great. And they're teams that are there for the taking, but we don't take points from those teams.
No, we don't. And Brighton probably argue their best player this season has been McAllister. They were without him. And then they've obviously, because of the thing with Caicedo at the moment, he was obviously only on the bench as well. Who else that they were about? They were about someone else, I think.
Lallana.
Lallana didn't. So, and Trossard's just gone as well.
Yeah.
Why is it that he said that Brighton were flying? Only a few weeks ago, he said that Fulham were struggling. Yet they were only they were next to each other in the table.
Yeah, he's not quite sure. I think he's just getting himself in a bit of a hole. I mean, he knows Fulham aren't struggling. I think he just got himself in a bit of a muddle there. But yeah, it's concerning. I think I tweeted out. I didn't before I watched the press conference. I thought I don't need to, because he'll say there's positives. He'll say the boys gave their all, and he'll say it was fine margins, and he'll moan about a few decisions that. Watara, maybe it was a penalty. I'd be gutted if our defender got. Yeah, he didn't really play the ball, but it's a little nudge, and causing loads of problems. I'd love him to tell me what problems we're causing when the goalkeeper didn't need to get up in the morning, because we don't test the goalkeeper. He says this every time. If these are positive, then I'm fucking worried. But yeah, it was, as you say, they weren't quite on it, and we never looked like winning the game, in my opinion. I just don't really get this kind of. All these positives. I mean, I remember saying it after Forest, everyone saying us, we're playing against Forest at home and we're not really creating anything. It's the same again. It's just, it's so dire. And surely if you're, I understand Brighton are a possession-based team and we set out to counter-attack, but they're still getting, how many shots did they have? They had loads of shots. I can't remember what the actual stat was. I mean, like 20, they had so many shots, so many chances with it, the post, the goal line clearances. We're having 29% of the ball. And then we're making changes to try and hang on. And then we can't rectify that because we made all the subs to three different intervals. So then at the end of the game, you get into stoppage time. We're 1-0 down. We've got a back five. We're virtually five in front. We can't get forward. We can't do anything. And I don't really get what the thinking was. And as Keith alluded to, the way they play and stuff, just bringing on another defender for Anthony, it's just inviting them on even more. You've got to defend from the front sometimes, and to stop them playing out from the back, you need to press them higher up, not just sit off even more and give them more room to manoeuvre. And you saw with Matoma, just find a little pocket and, you know, then get in. So go on.
What's even more terrifying is the way we set up for defending set pieces. We've got nobody on the edge of the box to close down. So you're just inviting a team that likes to score from outside the box. You've got Solly March, who has a foot on him, and you're just inviting him in to just have a free run at it. And we set up, we're not a zonal marking, we're not really marking at all, apart from one or two doing man marking. That's terrifying. And but when we do have opportunities, and you think with the scant opportunities we're going to have to score, set pieces are going to be a big thing. And we've got tall lads and big lads. Do we make anything out of it? How many times do you see that the ball doesn't get beyond the first man?
Yeah.
And this is basic stuff. So we can't score in open play. We're offering no threat in close play. We're all over a place and set pieces. And then, to end it all, we're bringing on substitutions to be defensively minded. And we're just inviting pressure on. And this is the sort of form that relegation teams show. Not scoring, can't defend. Yeah. That's a recipe for... Thank you very much. We've had a nice time in the Premier League. See you later.
Mm.
So scrutiny now turns to, I suppose, when, but we'll come on to that, but why in the first place? I mean, we can talk about this till the cows come home, but we'll never really understand how we can go from someone like Bielsa to Gary O'Neill. It doesn't make sense. And we've had a lot of tweets that allude to this as well. Why would you appoint Gary O'Neill with no management experience at elite level?
No manager experience at any level. It's not at elite level. Yeah, he hadn't even managed.
Didn't he have a stint at Bolton?
Not as a manager, I don't think, did he? Unless you're a coach or something, I'm not sure. But he's certainly not been a manager apart from his kids' football team, I think, maybe. It doesn't make any sense. We spoke about this before, and I think it's just been put more to the forefront because you see Everton are absolutely all over the place, didn't sign anyone, but they got a proper manager and beat top of the league. So
your frustration that you're conveying makes it look as though Gary's the target of your wrath, but it's not, is it?
No, not at all. He shouldn't be given the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, he shouldn't be given the job. Once he's in it, it's that he can't turn it down, I guess.
Some murmurings that I've heard indicate that Blake and Hughes actually wanted to go for Foley. And it was...
No, wanted to go for Bielsa.
I think they wanted to go for Foley.
Yeah.
Wanted to go for Bielsa. But it was Foley that was impressed by Gary, and we've seen the sound bites. What Foley says, I think he's a terrific coach. He's got a lot of upsides. Our football staff have helped him in terms of hiring some assistants and helped him learn and progress and all that kind of stuff. He did well to pick him up off the floor. Those kind of quotes, and I don't know.
Obviously, this is all. Yeah, I don't actually know, but I struggle to believe it just because. Before Foley come in, we appointed, obviously hired Jason Tindall from within, and then we just gave it a Woodgate for a bit. And then they initially were the ones that gave O'Neill the interim manager's job. So yeah. I find it hard to then say they don't do what they always do. Mm. I'm not 100% sure on that. But regardless, it's a very, very poor decision. I wonder if Keith and I have been speaking about it. I do wonder if they've got something planned for the summer. And maybe a manager, whether it be Bielsa or someone else, was looking at coming in and said, you know, I don't mind what league we're in, but I want to come in the summer. I don't want to come in now. Mm. So Gary O'Neill maybe is the fall guy and is going to be here. And their plan was maybe he can keep us up. If he does, it doesn't matter. We're going to let him go at the end of the season. I do wonder if it will become too toxic and we'll end up just having Cooper and Elphick to the end of the season, to be honest. But I do wonder if there's maybe a thought in place that we'll get someone in the summer.
Look, I'm going to... This is being recorded on Monday afternoon. Mm. So this will be coming out Monday evening. It looks like Jesse Marsh has been sacked by Leeds, according to an unofficial source. I'm seeing it on a WhatsApp group here. So if that's the case... I mean, we've got external pressures as well, with Southampton doing so badly under Nathan Jones. And the fans there are certainly more toxic than we are. And yeah, they will be ruthless. Why won't we be ruthless? Why not? I mean, we were more ruthless under Max Demme.
Yeah, there's no plan because they've thrown their eggs in the Bielsa basket. He didn't want the job now. Whether it remains to be seen whether he'll want it at a different point, but he certainly didn't want it. And we didn't have anything else to think about. So we just gave it to O'Neill because he beat Everton. It was a weird season as well in the sense that because of the World Cup. We had a really good period where you had 6 weeks. We only had a couple of players going to the World Cup for Wales who were out pretty quickly. Could have had a new manager in, come in and work with the group. It was a unique season in that sense. But for whatever reason, we decided not to. And I don't think they know what to do. I don't think they know what to do now. They didn't expect it to go this bad. But it's just black and white. We've scored one goal since he's been given the job. We've got 1 point. we just lose every week and don't really have any shots, it's getting to a point where we're either accepting relegation or we need to do something drastic. And I just don't see it. Like you say, Leeds have got rid of their manager, who I can see why they're struggling. I watched them yesterday. They're struggling. They deserve something out of the game, in my opinion. They're all right to watch. Mm. They're all right, they're watchable. I'd much prefer that. But you just know that Leeds are thinking, yeah, it might be all right to watch, but we need to stay up. So they've obviously made a change by the looks of it. I thought Southampton might be first, but they'll be next. We won't be next.
So the two teams that we've lost to quite badly, 4-3 Leeds, Southampton 1-0 at home, are both looking to...
pull the trigger, haven't they?
Yeah. Mm.
It's a difficult one because I think we have to cast our minds back when Foley was saying that. Actually, Gary was doing okay. Yeah. He did steady the ship, so he's only seeing what he's seeing. I think the lack of planning goes back a lot further than that. I think Project Parker has really stung the club. I think they thought this is the new Eddie. He's proven to have big shortcomings. His profligacy in the two windows last season, we've just gone through, almost all these players are gone. And yet, when you tot up the whole of what he's spending, it's the equivalent of what Burnley have spent getting 16 players in and investing off-pitch in the Championship. And they look as though they're ready for the Premier League. They play Premier League football. And that has left them in, I think, in a panic. And Foley has made it quite clear, the footballing side, he's got enough on his plate with the Laurent thing, and obviously he's trying to get things underway. He's got enough on his plate at the moment, as well as babysitting two guys who he must have assumed they must know what they're doing. And I'm not here to slate them, but their decision-making and accountability, they weren't held to account, let's be honest, by Max. And during the latter end of Max's period, it drifted. And now that drift is continuing. What I will say, however, is that Foley has come out and said, we are not going to get relegated. Now, I work for American firms and I can only go by my own experience, but football clubs are like every other organisation. And my feeling is behind the scenes, the Americans are doing what they call fact-finding. Mm. They're making assessments on everyone from the tea lady and the boot boy all the way up to the top. And whoever it is, this international man of mystery who's in the stands, who is representing, is it Foley or is it the next gaffer? We don't know. Every single person in that club is now under maximum scrutiny. Mm-hmm. And come what may, there's a kill list being sorted out of people with P45s, including Gary. And if the task is set, you have to stay up. And if you don't stay up, you're gone.
What I don't understand, though, Tom, is that I thought that Foley and all that lot were interested in taking on the club when Parker was in charge. And surely Parker would have got wind of that. He wouldn't not know that information. Yet he's complaining like, I need help. Like, surely he could have just bided his time a little bit, knowing that help's just around the corner, as it turned out to be.
Yeah, it is odd, isn't it? Like you say, patience is a virtue. He was, if he waited a little bit longer, he might have got that time. Who knows?
Is there the communication between the different layers in the club?
Well, probably not. I don't really know what the... You look at the kind of hierarchy and things like that, and you can't really tell what anyone's doing and what's actually going on and who's in charge of what. It feels a bit of a mess. Feels a bit muddly, for sure. But yeah, it's all very weird, and I agree totally what Keith's saying, that I think, and you alluded to it too, Sam, that I think they thought Parker was going to be the next, the next Eddie, if you like, and it was going to be this project. And then when that didn't work out, there was no alternative and there was no direction after that. So they're all in a bit of a mess and don't know what to do. But nice to see him. Absolutely loving it in Belgium, mate. 0-0 they drew yesterday. Their fans are not happy.
So we're in limbo at the moment with this, not knowing what's going on. And I mean, other clubs previously have put out like votes of confidence and stuff. I don't think that will be happening with AFC Bournemouth. But one of the criticisms previously, historically, with AFC Bournemouth's managerial appointments is that they take so long. Hmm. Maybe, just maybe, they are queuing up candidates in the background, ready to then put the corner flag tweet up, and then have a new name 24 hours later. Do you think?
Maybe. I think,
I mean, that's my hope.
Yeah, I think my expectation is more that they're thinking of the summer. I don't think there'll be a change now. I really don't. I don't know who would take the job now. No. I don't know why you take the job. If your job is you need to keep us up, otherwise it's under threat, you ain't taking this job.
No.
Because, yeah, you look at other clubs, you can't see how we're going to... I don't know what the odds are now, but I think they're like 1-5 or something for us to go down. Like, it does look that way, so it'd be difficult to get anyone in now. I think we missed a great window and a great opportunity to do that, and now it's kind of more thinking, you know, obviously I want to stay up, but if we go down, we go down, so be it. I just want to know that there is some sort of direction and planning going forward to, right, if we do go down, what's the plan? How are we going to rebuild? Keith mentioned it there, but Burnley got relegated and got one of the most fought-after coaches who was doing well at, in Belgium. In Vincent Kompany, they've completely changed their style of football and their philosophy. They've allowed him to bring in the players that he wants and he knows, and they're going to absolutely storm that league, and they'll be back in the Premier League before you know it. We got promoted, so we went like that, they went like that, and look at the difference to what they've done behind the scenes. It's absolutely incredible. And we saw that first down when they played against us. It's chalk and cheese, and they got relegated and we got promoted. So it's worrying. It's really worrying, and it's really hard to stay upbeat, to be honest, mate. Really, really difficult. I think I've said this before, I always got grief for being Mr. Positive. I can't do it. I can't find anything in me, because I'm going to these games and it was 11 minutes. I worked out, I looked at my phone. It's 11 minutes while I looked at time going, is it time to go for a pint?
Yeah.
Because I can't watch it. It's so dull. It's so boring. There's no structure. There's no plan. It's just soak it all up. Hope they don't score. When they do, have a little bit of try and do something, and it's just so dull. And then everything behind the scenes is frustrating as well. So we had that little pickup, didn't we, with the transfer window. And don't get me wrong, I think that we've brought in some good additions. I think Traore in particular just looks like a hell of a player. But is that window just going to suddenly keep us up? Of course it isn't.
The football day is all about everything apart from the 90 minutes.
100%.
Yeah. That's what I enjoy football for. Steve Hensman, he put out a sort of 8-point tweet, and he mentions a lot of things about being through the mill this year, the Parker saga, the 9-0, unfriendly VAR, uninspiring O'Neill, mad tactics, new ownership uncertainty, crucial injuries, cruel results as well. He says, from a motivational point of view, do you think we need more than just a new boss, elite level structure? Do we need that?
Fundamentally, we need a complete rethink. Potentially, this is the biggest rebuild since John Bond. In 1972, 73, that's 50 years ago. And if Foley, and to be fair, he's followed through so far, and it's in his interest to do that. He clearly sees that at the moment there is a club without a city. I mean, you go down Boscombe High Street, you wouldn't know there's a football team there.
No, you wouldn't.
That's how disconnected the club is from their community. And I understand the temptation of fans to say we need to go out and spend money. Well, we're constrained by the revenue we generate. We're 11,000 seater stadium. We don't own our ground. We have a temporary stand. We're not generating the revenue to even compete at this level. Foley's recognised that. So, and I think that's part of the reason why he's taken it on, because he can build it in his own image. Whether it turns out or not, I don't know, but that sort of remains to be seen. But it needs, dare I say, professionalism in the club. I think we bumbled along. Even under Eddie, we were make, do, and mend quite a lot. And you get to season 3 and it starts to drop off, because we just can't sustain just on TV money on its own. It sounds like a lot, £100 million or £110 million. You can now, in 2023, that's the cost of one player. We can't keep up that level. And a question was asked in a couple of podcasts ago. People seem to think we're Premier League, but in name only. We really have the structure of a League One, a lower League One
club. We've grown too quickly on the pitch, but off it, we just haven't.
We throw money on the pitch in the hope that will keep us up.
Yeah,
and then slowly build, but then the relegations cost that.
And try building a stadium in your Premier League That's why Everton are potentially in a death spiral, because they're trying to build a stadium. Mm. Arsenal had to forgo years without trophies or anything. It was just enough to keep in the top four and Champions League. Spurs are the same. You try doing that, and they're big, broad shoulders. We try doing that, we'll be out of business.
And Arsenal managed to keep in that position because of one man, mainly Arsene Wenger. And Eddie Howe was the person that got us through the meal at times.
And what did he say? We to sustain this club, we need to invest off the pitch. And we've not done that. We have tried to gamble on a Hail Mary coach that, if you really looked at his record, he's a great player, Scott Parker, what he's done for England, and that's what people went for. They thought, he's played for England, ergo, he's a great manager. But we've just seen three of them just thrown out. And we've not... The boring things like FFP and all that, let's be honest, do the fan base know about those sort of things? They don't. So you consequently, it's almost like the fans are... It's a circular firing squad. We've got to go out and buy players, we've got to do this, rather than actually do what Brighton, Brentford and Burnley, Luton, Fulham have done it. They've just invested in the boring things, but those boring things accumulate to getting what you get on Saturday.
We've, going back to like kind of, you know, what Steve was saying there and what we're going into, it's that, Keith said it then, we're acting, apart from just splashing cash on players, we're acting like a lower league club. The last decade, we've been in the top two leagues, and we've got nothing to show for it, apart from splashing some money on players.
We've got another scoreboard, we've got automated turnstiles, mate.
And
queuing outside your own... I don't know any sports club where you queue outside your own clubhouse, the 1910 bar, you have to queue in. I don't know any sports club that does that.
It's that sense of it's been a decade of being in the top two leagues, but we don't act like that at all. No. We're not working with that off the pitch, regardless of players. And I think, like Steve was getting to it there, there's no real, we don't know anything in terms of, so off the pitch, you've got an inexperienced manager, you haven't got an assistant. And everyone around him is all kind of inexperienced and just come out of, right, he's doing that in the development squad, we'll take him, blah, blah. And then you go, have we got a psychologist? Have we got people doing this? I don't know what anyone does, really. It's just a group of people that, a lot of them are legends of the football club, by the way, and I'm delighted to have them around. Mm. But there's no guidance. Who's guiding these people? When they're in training and they've got all these players that cost 20, 30 million quid, who's guiding them? Are you telling me that, you know, all these people that have got no Premier League experience are the ones that are supposed to be getting us out of this mess? It doesn't make any sense.
More importantly than that, it's shown in players. We've got three players are going to be out of contract at the end of the summer. Yeah. Jefferson Lerma, Jordan Zamora, Jaden Anthony. Now, if their agents have said no, they want to move on, surely you'll use this window to recuperate money.
Yeah, and that's what Abby Markham has said as well, about the concern about losing players. And, you know, there is a big concern, especially with our form at the moment. Yeah.
Well, it's not just losing players. We're not getting money. I'm all for... This is the model that you sell on players for good money. And if they've made it clear, their agents have made it clear, we're not staying, then we should be looking to capitalise on it and then reinvest it. That is how Brighton have got to where they are, along with, you know, their fan base fighting for their club. We don't do that. We let players go. And what we bought last season, for all the best will in the world, we're not going to be making any money on Keith Amore, but we spent £10 million because we did, for reasons. And it didn't even fit into the squad and how we play. So, how long is it? Is Phil Billing going to hand in his transfer notice? Where's the future with Dom? Where's the future? And these are, you know, Meppen's not old. He's a young, upcoming central defender. He's had more than a gutful of being abused. Why wouldn't he just say, I'm sorry, I'm out?
There does seem to be a disconnect. You were talking about walking through the high street in Boscombe, yeah, you wouldn't know. But there's a disconnect with the manager of the fan, and I hate to keep harping on about it, talking about Eddie, but he had that. This next game against Newcastle, I'm dreading it. It's going to be an emotional roller coaster for many fans who never got to say goodbye.
Yeah.
It's their first chance to greet him again, who's manager of a club now that are probably punching above the weight of players that they've got on the pitch, really. They've got all this financial muscle in the background, we know, but really the purchases that they've got have been very astute. And he's now guiding them to perhaps a top four place.
And a trophy, maybe.
And a trophy.
Yeah.
We're seeing what, you know, what we could have had. And of course, we did have that for a bit. He had that relationship with the fans. I'm not sure that any manager since him has had that.
No, I think, for sure. And it's going to be, obviously, you don't want to keep mentioning it, but it's even more relevant now that we've got them at the weekend. And it's probably is going to be the first time in history that an opposition manager has loved more than the current manager. I've seen a lot of things online, which I understand. People going, oh, we can't sing his name, you know, we've got a game to win. We've been getting behind the lads. We were all clapping them off at the weekend, by the way, when we lost again without really testing the goalkeeper. We've been clapping them. We were singing Gary O'Neill's name, remember, which got him the job. How's that done? How's that done for us? Are you telling me that you don't think... if the players are affected because I decide to sing Eddie Howe's name, if that costs them winning a football match, then what the hell are they? Do you know what I mean? We ain't going to win anyway. I'm not being funny. If you said it to me when we were speaking... Arsenal still sing Arsene Wenger.
Man United still talk about Alex Ferguson. Liverpool fans, you know, talk about Shankly.
And they would do it if they were there.
Forest talk about Clough.
Yeah. And you telling me that the only reason we're in this amazing position of talking about the amount of money we spent in January and talking about the fact that we're being in the top two leagues of the last decade is because of Eddie Howe. Mm. Are you telling me I'm 100% going to be cheering? I couldn't care whether it's before, whether it's during, whether it's after, I'll be doing it.
And I believe it's the first time he's set foot back in Dean Court since he's left.
Yeah, and if people honestly think that that's going to affect our... I'm still going to get behind the boys.
Of course we are.
I'm not going to do it, you know what I mean? But if you're telling me that's going to affect the performance, you're having a laugh. We've scored one goal since the break. That ain't going to affect anything. It will be weird because we played them away from home, but we haven't had, you know, there's obviously such a distance, we haven't had that many fans, so never really got to say goodbye. We'll get a good reception. Obviously you want it to be more before and after a game. You don't want it to be loads during. I'm sure we'll... Ryan Fraser was on the bench, by the way. So I'm sure we'll make sure he's welcome when he's warming up, of course. But it is going to be really weird, mate. It's going to be really weird, and it's kind of weirdly fitting that what's going on at the moment on the pitch with the fan base and with the manager, that we've got our hero coming back. It's just madness, isn't it? It's going to be very peculiar game. It's on telly for everyone to see as well. It's going to be odd, but my concern, obviously, first and foremost, is I want to get some points, and my concern is that the way Newcastle, the intensity that they bring, and from the first whistle, we could be 2-0 down inside 10 minutes. It could get really, really nasty in there.
But there's an astute guy, and don't forget, all our ex-coaches are coming back, and some of them will be relishing this game. Let's not forget, we were quite quick to pan them as well, so they've got a point to prove. But there's an astute guy that took a time out. When everyone's saying, you've got to take the Celtic job, you've got to take this job, he took time out. I would imagine he's learnt a smattering of Spanish, and he's sitting there with one of the best managers in European football, Simeone, learning about football. And has the humbleness to do that and adapt. He's an infinitely better manager now with the style of football he plays, the balance between defence and attack, and it's intense. And he's gone to the next level. And he would never... And he had to leave us in order to do that because... we weren't prepared, or not we as in the fan base, but people, the decision makers, were not prepared to invest where he wanted it. The first thing Newcastle did wasn't buy a player. They invested off pitch. We've got to improve the environment in which these players work in. That was the first insistence Eddie Howe said. That's got to happen because the players have got to enjoy wanting to play here, and the fans have got to enjoy wanting to come here. That's what they've done, and that's what all these smart managers are doing. You know, we live game in, game out, the crisis at Man City. Oh, I mean, what a crisis to be in. God. You're second and you've got
feel
one.
For them.
Yeah, I'm in tears for them. I fear for them all the time. But all these top level managers, it's all about the environment you're creating. You have one style of play that you're coaching and you're drilling, and we're just so far away from that. We're just all over the place, mate.
Definitely. It's more than just what's on the football pitch, sadly. And that's what's concerning. Yeah. That's what's concerning, yeah.
So, we've got about 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
We'll talk about potential new names. Any spring to mind?
Are you talking about managers?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, God. We've missed the boat on a few, haven't we?
Well, look, I mean, you know, Jesse Marsh, American.
No thank you.
Brash. Bill Foley. You know, no, maybe not. Ralph Hasenhüttl.
I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. He's not a bad manager.
He knows the area relatively.
Yeah, I think it's difficult now to get anyone in at this stage. I think it depends what you're asking me. If you're asking for more of a long term thinking of kind of going forward and whatever league we're in, you know, a style of football, a philosophy, who's gonna, you know, get the players working and have a plan going forward, then you maybe look at Ralph, you maybe go down to, you know, Robins of Coventry, these sort of names. If you're going no, just stay in the Premier League, then you would have got Sean Dyche. You would have.
So have, I mean, a few people have asked this. Matt has as well. Have we accepted relegation?
I have.
I have as well.
I accepted it last season.
Mm. Yeah, you did always like.
Well,
To be honest, I did, but it's the manner of what's happening this season that makes me really, really irate.
To be honest, I felt kind of sad that I went to Bristol City and we won. We were actually cruising at one point, but I came back into it. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm looking at this team and I'm assuming that this is the team that's going to take us in, be the first team in the new season. I'm thinking, we're so far off it. Mm. I think last January, I just looked at the transfer dealings and I'm thinking, there's no structure here, there's no planning, there's nothing like that. So, whilst I was pleased for the night that we won promotion, I think that was a tiny little plaster over a massive crack. Mm. And what has surprised me is how quickly it became undone.
Yeah.
But and how quickly it's escalated. But no, I resigned myself last season that I didn't think. I think it was always mission impossible. But a lot of fans at the time were saying, well, it doesn't matter if we get relegated. It does now.
Yeah, no,
because I know. Because there are an awful lot of fans that were saying, don't matter, we'll get the money. Now Sugar Daddy's come along. Now all of a sudden we've got to win it. We've got to win it.
And our purchases surely put more scrutiny on financial fair play in terms of if we do get relegated, not as much income going through the door. Also, the value of players naturally decreases when they become Championship players.
Just said we're probably going to lose three for nothing. I think you were kind of saying it there, Sam. It was we're not stupid. We knew it'd be difficult this season.
Mm.
We knew it'd be difficult. It's the fact that I don't think we give ourselves a fighting chance because of the decisions we made and the lack of plan and lack of structure, lack of anything. I don't think we've given ourselves a fighting chance to stay in this division, and it's really frustrating. And all we've done is splash a bit of cash in January, but you know that's not the, you know, you don't have a divine right to just splash money at players that have never played in the league and just stay up. And I think obviously Everton and not doing that and getting a manager has proven that very, very quickly. But yeah, I always knew we'd struggle. I always thought we would probably it would be very difficult to stay out of that bottom three. But the way we've gone about it is not acceptable, in my opinion.
We've not given these young lads a chance. We didn't coach them properly last season. Clearly shown this season. We have bought in players and literally stalled their careers. You feel for someone like maybe not Laird, but Macondes. What did we get him in for? That's not that lad's fault. That's our fault.
Good day at the Oval, though, wasn't it?
Yeah,
good day. What a day. We've got many more questions. We've got about to fly through them, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. We have got a few. Yeah, so what type of manager? What type of manager do you want? So let's say we do get relegated.
Okay.
And are you... So is your heart saying that you would like any managerial change to be done in the summer, or would you rather it be done now, or what? But we're not going to attract the caliber of manager now that we might in the summer.
Yeah.
We want to. I suppose what we want is to have a new manager in the summer, but to have these little leaks to our trusted press sources that there is this kind of activity.
Something's happening. Yeah.
Of course, the club aren't going to say it themselves, but because it undermines Gary a little bit. But it would be good to know that there is something going on.
Yeah, I think if you got a, I was never convinced on Scott Parker, but the reason I kind of understood it and kind of got behind it was because I thought they've obviously sought this guy out. because there's been rumour for ages Liverpool and Scott Park. So there's a plan there. Mm. What happened, I don't know. But so if we were to get a manager in that you think, no, we've been behind the scenes trying to do this, you know, we get a guy in and they say, well, this has been in the works for years, but I said I'm not coming into the end of the season. Then just to see that we're going somewhere, really, I don't see that. In terms of an actual, it depends what you want. If you want to stay in the league, you get an experienced manager like a Sean Dyche, obviously, to try and make you hard to beat and try and get the basics right. If we were to go down and we want to progress going forward, then I think you look at the players and you want to get the best out of them. But you've got to look at, there's a lot of good young managers in the Championship that potentially could progress us further, and you can see some sort of plan. But as I say, Matt, I just want to see a manager come in and go, why have we got this guy? Why have we got him? And go, okay, I understand that. I see the thinking. Let's trust in that. But it doesn't feel like that at all. We've just found Gary O'Neill and gone, oh, just give him the job. Yeah. Oh, he's beat Everton. Oh, God, yeah, just give him the job. He's cheap. And there's no plan. And I just want to see a plan, mate. Mm.
If I was sitting in Bill Foley's seat, there'd be two questions I'm asking. First of all, what sort of football do I want to see?
Mm.
Because that's got to align with how we're going to play. It's no use getting Sean Dyche and then saying, oh, I want to play through the thirds. Because that ain't that's not...
All goes back to that plan again, doesn't it? There's got to be a plan. What your philosophy is going
to
be.
But then we come to the fundamental question. I think I raised it the big podcast when Jason was appointed. We need a director of football to actually provide a strategy. Before we even appoint a manager, we've got... I'm not saying we need to get rid of Blake and Hughes, but we need someone in that position...
Make footballing decisions.
Making financial decisions with football in mind, and that's it. Because you could appoint whoever you want. If you haven't got that guy who goes to Mr. Foley, what do you want to play? Oh, I want to play like Man City. It could be as vague as that.
Mm.
Right, we'll source the coaches, we'll source the players within our budget, within reason. If you're appointing someone who is going, you're expecting to play, I don't know, like Barcelona, and he ends up playing like Stoke, it ain't going to work, is it? So before we even talk about a manager, we need to actually have, as I say, a sporting director, a director of football, and actually act like a modern club, because this is what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
And Dan Ashworth, you see the work he's doing at Newcastle. You see the guys at Brentford. You see the guys at Brighton. They're playing chess. We're playing checkers.
Mm. Very good.
It's all right, isn't it?
I had the analogy of, like, you know, Eddie Howe was like the super glue.
Mm.
Scott Parker was like the PVA glue.
Pritch stick.
Gary O'Neill was like Pritch
stick. Yeah. Don't mind that at all. Yeah, that's not a bad one.
A shame. But you know what? We've got to get behind the boys on Saturday. But it could turn toxic. It's going to be so, so strange. And hit it back of the net. We'll be covering it. Tom's got the... difficult job of talking about it on a wider scale on YouTube coming very soon. We'll post the link on our socials as he chats with other fans about our situation. Maybe Leeds fans are going to be slightly buoyant. There's some decisive action there. Will Foley and co. be decisive about O'Neill one way or the other? Judging by what people were saying, I think the Inside ACB account on Instagram or whatever, or Twitter, 97%. When I'm gone, which is, you know, a staggering amount. Mm. Every week that goes by, it's getting higher and higher. Interesting. You know, what part does he play on the AFC Bournemouth tube history map?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yes. Someone's got to win it. And we drew it earlier. You can see us when we were drawing online. The winner is AFCB fan Peter. That's the Twitter handle. Peter, well done.
Well done,
Peter. We will be in contact with you on DM and we'll find out where it is. Either we'll give it to you again. We'll post it off to you. Congratulations. Well done on that. Keithy T.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure to have you on, sir. It's been absolutely superb to shoot the shit. It's been great.
Yeah. Dunkyville, as they say in other places. And But just remember, Gary's a symptom, not the cause.
Yeah. Tom, it's been excellent. Well, I think.
Cheers. Loved it.
Thank you very much for watching or listening. Remember, if you're listening on the audio pod, this is available to watch on YouTube. And stay tuned to the YouTube channel throughout the week. Loads of content building up to that reunion with the legend, the Messiah, that is Simon Weatherstone. No, of course, we're talking about Eddie, Jason and co. Looking forward to it. See you then. Up the chase.
Up the chase.
Richie. Beyond Walker. Pugh.
That'll do it. That will do it. Pugh for Bolton. The roof of the Gold Sands is raised. Everyone here knows what that could mean to this football club.
Podcast Network.